Just going to run this dog to see if we can find any type of human remains that are left.
Listen to Where Secrets Go to Die, The Disappearance of Derek Hennigan. From the Detroit Free Press, a new podcast set in the woods of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Available on Apple, Spotify, Freep.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Dive into the thriving local arts, entertainment, and food scene with coasting editor Jerry Boggs and his guests. Let us be your guide to the creative South Coast.
Welcome back to another Coast in the Podcast. We're back in the tiny podcast studio at the Standard Times, and we have Patrice Tiedemann with us today. Welcome back, Patrice.
Hello. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
And when Patrice comes into the podcast studio, we always know there's a concert going on.
I'm cooking up something.
Yeah, not that you only come to us when you have a concert going on, but that's the most exciting time. Mm-hmm. So what do we have up from Sea Glass Theater next?
Well, next week we are doing Return to Camelot, the music of Lerner and Lowe, and we're presenting that in two locations. It's the first time we've ever done this. So August 20th, on the Tuesday of next week, we will be on the Cape at the Dennis Union Church in Dennis, Mass. And then on Thursday, August 22nd, we will be at the First Congregational Church in Fairhaven. And for those of you who attended our Bernstein concert last spring, this is the same location. Now, this wasn't where we were originally supposed to be. We were supposed to be at the Roach Jones Duff House and Garden Museum with Don Salerno, and for our sixth year being there, and because of Triple E and the mosquitoes, we have to move indoors.
Because it's a kind of an evening concert, so there would be
exactly. It starts at 7:00.
Bad things and buzzing around, yeah.
Exactly, and there were some concerns from some of the patrons that were had already purchased tickets and were planning on attending the concert, and Don and I made a decision together to move it to another location for this year, sadly. But
yeah, we're seeing a lot, there's a lot of Marianton Party was canceled. There's a lot of events like that that are being mm-hmm. altered to kind of mm-hmm. make sure everybody stays safe.
Exactly. So I went into my Rolodex of people that I knew who had buildings and said, what can you do for me? Can you help me out? And Reverend McClure and the staff at the Congregational Church were great and said, no, not a problem. And, we know already, doing a concert there, exactly what the layout is, so that's good for us too.
And the acoustics are good, and,
exactly.
and things are going to sound right, and it's going to be the right thing for the customer.
Exactly. Yeah. And the interesting thing, I was talking to the secretary today, and doing a program about Camelot. Well, when you think about Camelot, you think of all this intricate carving. Well, if you've ever been inside that church, it's gorgeous dark wood, all intricately carved, and very much in the style of the King Arthur and the Knights of the Round Table. So maybe this was a good happy thing that happened out of kind of a bummer kind of a thing.
And you also say Camelot, and I think of the Kennedys, so I think it's kind of apropos that you're going to the Cape. That's kind of fun.
Yes. We decided this year to go to the Cape. In my earlier years in my career, I did a lot of work for Cape Cod Opera and did a lot of concerts for them and full productions, and they quietly shut down a few years ago. And I'm still in touch with a lot of the people that worked for the company and were volunteers, and said, I want to try to bring Sea Glass there as well. I really think that what we're doing in programming could be fun on the Cape, and let's try it. And we had a nice connection at the Dennis Union Church, and Maggie Bossy is the music director there, and I know her from years and years ago in the music business, and one thing led to another, and we were getting set up there.
Fun.
And it's air conditioned. So if you would all like to travel to the Cape and have a nice meal on the Cape and sit in an air conditioned church, it's that's the first night will
nice.
Be that night.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And again, to go away from the Kennedys, that's not the Camelot you're traveling to. You're not taking people to that to the Jackie O Camelot.
No. But the interesting thing, I have three books on my bedside table, all about Lerner and Lowe. I'm doing deep dives. I've been doing that now for a couple of months, and now I'm just kind of refreshing my memory on a couple of things. And it keeps coming up that the reason why they called the Kennedy administration Camelot was because he was really a big fan of that show, and Camelot premiered right in during the time of the Kennedy administration.
Facts with Patrice.
Yes, and in the finale of Camelot, there is a speech by King Arthur that talks about how, you know, because at that point he's lost Guinevere, she's gone into a nunnery, Lancelot is taken off of France, and he has this speech where he says, "Let us be reminded about the knights and the things that we fought for justice, for equality." And so I think that, you know, maybe that resonated with the Kennedy administration. I put it in the show because I thought in this time and era where we're every day, it's, you know, there's so much angst and people have a lot of feelings right now. And I wanted to put that speech in there about that no matter what goes on in life, that, you know, that we're still striving for those things.
So I'm going to admit to you that I don't have three Lerner and Lowe books on my bedside table.
Shame.
Yeah.
Shame.
So tell me about Lerner and Lowe.
So Alan J. Lerner and Fritz Lowe. Lerner was the lyricist of the team. And they met in a funny way. Lerner had gone to Harvard. He was a classmate of Leonard Bernstein and came from that kind of background, and he was at the Lambs Club in New York City in 1942, and it's like a private club, and Fritz Lowe was a great deal older than him, I think like a 15 year difference, but he ended up on a wrong turn to the bathroom and happened to see Lerner and said, "Oh, you're a lyricist, aren't you?" And he said, "Yes, I am." And that's how they met.
Wow.
And then they, different things happened, but they ended up collaborating. And their first two musicals weren't so hot that they did together. They were kind of doing things for the first one was for like a summer stock company and, was not very successful. The next one ran for about a week on Broadway. It's not a good run. And then the next one after that in 1945 was The Day Before Spring, which was their first, what we would call a modest hit. It ran for a year. And we're actually doing three songs from that show in a medley.
Oh, cool.
The song, The Day Before Spring, and You Haven't Changed It All, and I Love You, Love You This Morning. And so we're doing those. And then the next big hit after that was Brigadoon, which is, I think, when you say to people Lerner and Lowe, they think My Fair Lady or Camelot. But there's also Brigadoon. But that was a big movie, though, with Gene Kelly, Sid Charisse. Paint Your Wagon, Gigi. Those are some of their other big hits. You know, we'll be singing songs from all of those, plus some of their unusual things, like I said, like The Day Before Spring. And then, you know, they had a fairly good working relationship with each other. I think from what I've been reading, they're very different personalities, but they knew how to work together. I think they brought out the best in each other. There was a point after, Camelot that Fritz Lowe was like, "Okay, I'm done for now." And then they kind of met back up again in 73 when Gigi, which is their only musical that started out as a movie, was going to become a Broadway vehicle. So then Fritz Lowe kind of came back into Lerner's life to work on that with him, and then The Little Prince, and then that was pretty much it for that partnership. But Lerner did work with other people, which is kind of interesting when you comparing what the output was between working with Fritz Lowe and then working with other composers.
Oh yeah.
Mm.
So I'm sure that your career, you've had quite a bit of experience with their work and performing their work.
Yes.
What drew you to return to Camelot for this summer?
I have a crazy mind, and who knows? Sometimes things just come to me, and I said, after last summer where we had done lots of like vintage beach blanket bingo kind of songs at the RJD, I said to Don, what should we do next? What should we do? And what do you think's the next thing? And she said, you haven't done a Broadway show here in a while, and people have asked us about that. And I said, okay. That sounds good to me. And then I said, do we just do kind of like a little bit of this and a little bit of that? And I said, no, let's do a particular composition team. And it just so happens that Alan J. Lerner's 100th birthday was the end of August 1918. Yeah. So I said, okay, so this is sort of kind of the end of the year. Well, I mean, with the Bernstein, I mean, it was the same thing. It was his 100th birthday, and how many organizations celebrated
everywhere.
That birthday for a year? There's still a little bit still trickling. So I figured, well, all right, so Alan Lerner gets a birthday cake still through to here, and there's such a wealth of gorgeous music. And my first experience with their music was in high school, because, you know, I often... you know, tell people I'm a product of the New Bedford public school system, and you know, Armin and George that run Festival Theater, they were the drama club directors then, and the show my senior year was My Fair Lady.
Ah.
So that was my first first experience with it. And of course, you know, being a theater kid in high school, when your directors announce the show in the spring, you scurry to find things on the show and to listen to the album and to prepare. And so
pick who you want to be.
Pick who you want to be. And so I was fortunate to be Mrs. Pierce in that production for them. And I learned so much about that show and about the grandeur of that show from them. And so, you know, that one has a tender spot in my heart.
Very cool. And we know it's not a Seaglass production without some great talent with you.
Yes.
So
yes.
Who are we going to be wowed by?
Well, all of them, all of them. Me, I'm just the second string. But I have Dennis Schumann, our tenor in the production, he was in the Bernstein. So those of you who went to the Bernstein production and were wowed by him singing Maria, I mean, it was just... he's just such a tremendous singer. He's been bopping around the country singing a lot of magic flute and for different opera companies and spending some time in Georgia and doing a bunch of things. But he's back. He's flying in this weekend, and he's back for this concert. And so he's going to take over the tenor responsibilities in this show. So he gets to sing the title song in Gigi, which was the song that won Lerner and Lowe an Academy Award. For that movie, for the song in the movie, so he's in it. And then we have Paul Soper, who's also returning. He was in our very first concert here at Seaglass in Classical Christmas, and he's doing the what we call the curmudgeon track. So he's doing Henry Higgins, he's doing King Arthur, he's also singing Ben Rumson in Paint Your Wagon. So, you know, you see a pattern here. I said to Paul, I need you because you do this better than anybody, but you are in the curmudgeon, the curmudgeon role.
But those are such juicy, you know, you get to have so much fun with roles like that.
Absolutely. And, you know, sometimes people say, well, you know, that's nothing gratifying for a singer. I mean, Rex Harrison chatted his way through Professor Higgins, but it is written. It is written musically. It isn't written just to talk and rhythm. There's actual notes there. And so I've said, you know, interpret this the way that you feel is right for you. And he's, you know, the King Arthur, I mean, to give him that speech that we were talking about.
Yeah.
And I said, I really trust this to you. I think this is going to be great. And then we have two debuts.
Nice.
So, you know, it's an interesting thing how the business has evolved since I've been in it way back in 1906. When I started out in the business, you had to mail your stuff to everybody, and, you know, there were live auditions. So much of the business now is done digitally.
Yeah.
And funny story, the soprano who's singing Eliza and Fiona and Brigadoon and Gigi and Guinevere, I found her through her website.
Oh, wow.
I knew of her through friends who, you know, this business is very small.
Yeah.
You know, it's six degrees. Everybody knows everybody somehow, or you know their friends. And I had known of her, but I found her website and listened to her and fell in love with her voice. And I said, here is a classically trained singer who sings opera and also then turns around and sings the national anthem for the Patriots and for the New England Revolution and sings jazz gigs and sings pop, you know, some pop tunes and pop musical theater. And so I said, this is exactly what a Seaglass artist is.
Yeah,
someone
no kidding.
Who's really flexible, great attitude. We've already had a rehearsal together, and she and I are going to do a song from Lerner's last production that he did with Charles Strauss. Now, you know Charles Strauss from Annie. And so Lerner did a production with him in 1983 called Dance a Little Closer. And there's a song in it called No Man Is Worth It. And it's kind of funny because in the song, it's really very negative about men and all the mistakes that they make and what women put up with them.
Yeah.
And it's kind of funny because Lerner himself had eight wives. So apparently he didn't get it quite right either. Yeah. And so this, you know, that show kind of is like him saying, yeah, it was kind of these things. So Jen and I get to do this song, which is, you know, a little different than when people think of Lerner Merlot. They think all this lush melody and that type of thing. So I hired her off of her digital materials, and it's paid off. She's really wonderful. I think people are going to enjoy her.
And her name again?
Her name is Jennifer Caraluzzi.
Okay.
And then finally, we also have now the man of the hour who's going to sing If Ever I Would Leave You, because how can you have a Lerner and Lowe show without the song that was made famous by Robert Goulet?
Mm-hmm.
You know, Robert Goulet was an unknown when they hired him for this show. You know, they're like, we need a strapping, good-looking guy with a killer voice. And they put him in the show as Lancelot, and his career just took off from that show. And that made his career. And I mean, he how many times did he sing If Ever I Would Leave You in his career? So Leroy Davis is a young baritone. He's in the BU Opera Institute. My music director is on the faculty at the BU Opera Institute, so he always has his ears out when he will say, you should work with this one, or we might want to work with this one, because they've got what we're looking for, which is a lot of flexibility, an interest in this, this repertoire, and ability to flip back and forth between classical and musical theater, and not to be afraid of that.
Yeah.
And so Leroy just came back. He was at Opera Theater of St. Louis this summer. He was a young artist there doing a world premiere, I believe, and some other things. And he's coming back into the BU program and going to be featured in some leading roles in that this season.
Very cool.
Yeah. I'm getting him before he flies off and becomes this major opera star.
Before he becomes Robert Goulet.
Before he becomes Robert Goulet, that's right, right.
Excellent. And let's do a little just kind of housekeeping stuff.
Sure.
Date and time, tickets, all of the necessary details that folks need to know when they want to come hear it.
Because they're going to run. They're going to run. It's Lerner and Lowe. It's going to be great.
and one of the things I think, you know, people haven't kind of gleaned it by now, it's not just Camelot. You know, it's you're doing kind of some really, you know, if you're a fan of musical theater, you're going to like these songs, because it's not,
correct,
you know, kind of one production, it's not one show, it's some kind, right, of, I wouldn't call it greatest hits, because you have some deep cuts to go.
We do.
Kind of off the rails, but
yeah, I mean, so if you're looking, I always say to people, if you're coming to the concert and you want to hear I Could Have Danced All Night and If Ever I Would Leave You and Almost Like Being in Love, you are going to hear those pieces. But there's also the collaborations that Lerner did with Burton Lane. So we have a selection from On a Clear Day, You Can See Forever. Because, you know, Alan Lerner was very into ESP.
Oh.
He was very into the afterlife and ESP, and he always wanted to do a show about it. And Fritz Lowe was like, are you kidding me? He was very Viennese, and he's like, I'm not doing this crap. And Burton Lane was like, no, let's do it. So they wrote On a Clear Day, which, of course, the movie, I mean, everybody, you know, knows the movie with Barbara Streisand.
Mm-hmm.
But this is from the Broadway stage version. And I've always wanted to do that piece from it, because you need some killer singers.
Yeah.
And I have, you know, some killer singers. And then we have some other pieces from Lerner's other collaborations. He did quite a bit with Burton Lane.
Cool.
That type of thing. But if you're interested in hearing not only the big hits,
mm-hmm,
from Lerner and Lowe, but also hearing Lerner's collaborations with other artists and what he did, the first concert will be this coming Tuesday. That's at the Dennis Union Church.
And the date is?
That is August 20th.
August 20th,
and
yes,
it's at 7 o'clock. And the way that we do it is we have advance tickets still running, and it gives you a $5 discount. It's $20 if you buy them ahead of time, the day before that window shuts down,
mm-hmm,
and then you can buy them at the door for $25.
Yeah.
And it's first come, first serve, general seating, you know, if you want to be right up close and personal, if you want to be
in
the back.
Get in line, yeah.
Exactly, just get in line and come sit. Both locations are handicap accessible,
mm-hmm,
so if you have someone with you with limited mobility, you are absolutely welcome at both places. There is a way to get you in the door, and we will take good care of you.
Oh, perfect.
And then Thursday, it's the change from the Roach Jones Duff House Museum. Mm-hmm. We are now at the First Congregational Church in Fairhaven. That's on Center Street. It's right across the street from the Fairhaven Town Hall. So there's parking on the street, but there are handicap accessible parking spaces. There's an elevator to get into the building, to get into the sanctuary. And, you know, it's the same thing with the tickets there.
And, as well. And they're available through your website?
They are available. If you go on to seaglasstheater.com, there's a link to click. You can also go directly onto Brown Paper Tickets and type in Return to Camelot, and it will show both performance days.
And your Seaglass Theater, E-R? R-E?
Yes, E-R. Not the British theater. You know?
That's journalists are, we adhere to the AP style Bible, and so it says ER, but if it's a proper name, it's New Bedford Festival Theater.
Yes, well they do, do TRE, but
so yeah, anytime
they're much fancier than I am, so.
Anytime I'm looking at my URL window, I'm like, is it ER, is it RE? So I just wanted to clarify for...
And I think my metrics make it point to me no matter which way you point it in.
Good.
But so, you know, people can get advance tickets if they want, or they can buy them at the door. And
perfect.
You know, we hope to see a lot of people. We have a lot of interesting things planned going forward for the company. We've got a really cool project in November that I'm going to come back and talk to you about.
Nice.
And we're planning beyond that.
And I always like to hear, you know, I think the last time we talked a lot about kind of your curatorial process of kind of the how deeply you go into kind of arranging the lineup, and I don't know, maybe then we compared it to the idea of, like, you know, back in the good old days making a mixtape where you got to figure out, you know, which song follows which song, and which song will carry the mood, and which song kind of breaks the mood and,
exactly.
and changes over to a new mood and things like that.
Well, you know what's funny is that when they started Camelot, when it was in its out-of-town tryout, when they were working on it in Toronto, it was 4 hours long.
Oh.
Yeah, and the joke was, it's as long as the opera Tristan und Isolde, but with not nearly the same happy ending. And of course, if you know Tristan and Isolde, there was no happy ending. So that was the joke, and they had to do a lot of trimming and cutting. And that's kind of the same process. I always start very wide. I say, okay, learner and low. What, you know, and I think about the people that are working for me. What do they do well? What would showcase them? What would be meaningful? And I also try not to give people anything that is not useful for their careers. So I try to give them songs and say, hey, put this in your back pocket. You might need to use this at some point.
That's an interesting, you know, kind of like, you know, I did sports for 10 years, so pardon my going back to there for the metaphor, but it's like a coach crafting their game plan for the team, not saying, okay, this is my favorite song, you need to learn how to sing it right.
Exactly.
Because I want to do the song
regardless.
Does this
work for you? But when I first had this program kind of laid out, it was about 2.5 hours long. And we try to keep them to about 45 minutes each set so that people aren't, you know, hanging around all night long. You know, our unofficial tagline is, try us, how horrible can it be? you know, so it's like, it's only an hour and a half of your life. You know, hopefully you will. I say, if you love it, tell your friends. If you don't love it, don't tell anybody.
Yeah, just keep your mouth shut.
Just keep your mouth shut. Just walk on by. It's fine. I won't be offended. But, you know, I had to do the same thing, which was trim down. And it's hard because you fall in love with it. And there was things that they wrote that I had no idea that they had written that music. I didn't remember, for whatever reason, that they had written the music to the Little Prince movie from the 70s. I didn't realize that. And I, you know, I always knew of the movie Royal Wedding. And Lerner wrote, did lyrics for that and was nominated for an Academy. It was his first Academy Award nomination for a song called Too Late Now that Jane Powell sang in the movie. And I'm going to sing that one.
Oh, nice.
But in a little bit of a lower, smokier key than Miss Powell. She was kind of a very light soprano, but we're going to do that one. But that's the hard thing, is that you.
Cool.
I start to fall in love with the output and to think of it, like I said, from a high school kid who Armin and George introduced me to My Fair Lady, and then, you know, and then knowing about all of these other...
Now, I feel safe to say that you've probably spent months, you know, reading the books and doing your research. You do an incredible amount of research into these things. By the time the show's over, you're like, I'm learned and load out for the next, like, few months. Or will it still be in your car, you know, when you're on a road trip?
Oh, it'll be there because some of these songs... I think, you know, I'll put in my rotation if I need them for a concert or thing. But, you know, we said the same thing about the Bernstein last year. And then after Seaglass's concert ended, I still had a couple of more appearances doing Bernstein repertoire. So the Bernstein year for me kept going and going and going and going. And it was a wonderful thing. And I don't get tired of it. And I'll tell you, right now, you know, the planning, obviously, for the Lerner Low is done. Now it's just the execution of the product. I'm knee-deep in the research for the November show.
Oh, wow.
And I'm also in the beginning stages of the research for next fall, which is the biggest project Seaglass has ever done, and working on that. So I'm already...
We call that a teaser in the
business.
It's
a teaser, yes. That one I can't talk about too much, but that one will be probably the biggest thing we've done yet. With a lot more moving parts than I've ever done.
You know, you mentioned Armand, and it reminds me of talking to him last year, and I think the day opening night for their West Side Story show, he was on the phone securing the rights for Mamma Mia for this year.
Exactly.
You know, once the kind of the curtain rises, obviously you're performing, so it's not the same for you, but all the groundwork has to be in place long in advance before most people can even realize what's going on.
Yes, and when you're in the show and producing it, it's its own challenge.
Yeah.
And one of the reasons I do the shows right now is so that I'm the utility player. I sing the alto lines in the ensembles. I do a few solos to give the other people a break. But basically, I'm there to help them and just support them, and so that it's more about them. I highlight them on social media and push them to the forefront. But it's hard. It's hard to do that producer cap and that performer cap at the same time. I've learned a lot from festival theater, from working in their shows and seeing how hard they've worked to produce. And when George was in shows and being part of the administration of it. That's a hard thing.
And then you also have to put yourself in the audience seat and say, okay, what... You know, you mentioned the songs that they come in expecting to hear.
Yes.
So you have to also make sure that you know, the audience is served as well as your fellow performers. So it's
yes. So that there's something that's artistically satisfying for your performers, and then things that you know your audience will say, "Oh, I'm so glad you did that." And here's the thing: when we've done compilation programs, there's always a tune or two that people have said, "Well, I wish you had done that one." When we did the '60s show a couple years back at the RJD, we did a fair amount of Beatles in medley, and people were like, "Oh, I wish you had done that." And I was like, "The Beatles have such a huge catalog, you know."
I've never been to a concert that somebody doesn't yell a song that the artist doesn't sing. You know, that's part of the part of the fun is hoping that your odd kind of offbeat favorite is going to be part of the set list that night. So it's very cool. So
I always say I like to leave them a little bit of, as a director friend of mine said, you give them the sugar, but you give them a little medicine at the same time too, so that you try to construct a program or a season if you're planning a bunch of different productions. Mm-hmm. You try to do a product, you know, so you have a big crowd, like Mamma Mia. I mean, who doesn't love Mamma Mia?
Yeah.
And so that was, you know, big hit at the Zyterian, and then now you have something that's a little, you know, this is a little different than that, you know, not on that grand scale, and you know, a little more focused on, you know, more intimate experience.
But I think, you know, and you know, I'm I think anybody, even whether you're kind of really into musical theater, you know, even if you don't immediately have Lerner and Lowe and think, "Oh, I know exactly what you're talking about." Mm-hmm. When you start talking about My Fair Lady and Camelot and Gigi and all of these things, like, you're going to be like, "Oh yeah, I really like them." I may not know who they were.
Right. We grew up with the movies.
Yeah.
You know, they used to be on Sunday afternoons. Yeah. Or, I mean, how did we encounter? I mean, obviously I'm dating myself here, but I was still a young child when variety shows were still a big deal. Mm-hmm. And all of these stars, I mean, Robert Goulet was singing If Ever I Would Leave You on every variety show that there was. And, you know, people go on talk shows and perform, and that's how you get kind of introduced to that. Or people will say to me, "I had no idea that song was from such and such."
Oh, yeah. And, you know, I'm sure a lot of people that grew up in choirs or chorals or things like that probably performed a lot of these songs, you know, at a smaller level, you know, even when they were younger. So it's kind of, you know, a lot of touchstones for people. So
right, and when I'm teaching young singers, you know, they come in. What do they all want to do? They want to do Dear Evan Hansen. They want to do Wicked. They want to do the things Hamilton. And I say to them, but you need to have these in your book too.
Yeah.
And they say, but why? Why? And I said, because here's the other thing. And my music director made this point to me. This music is for real serious singers. You have to have some serious chops to sing on the street where you live, which we're also doing. Dennis is going to sing that one. I mean, but you have to have a real, you know, grounded, significant amount of training to do that. I mean, it's, you know, to put them over well. And my thing is I want to present them, this is how they were done back then. This was when a Broadway show had a singing chorus and a dancing core. And so there were people who were there specifically because they could hold 5 and 6 part harmony, and then dancers who were spectacular dancers.
Yeah.
Now the business has changed a little bit. Now you kind of have to be able to do a little bit of everything, you know, depending on the show's demands. I mean, if you're in Hamilton, you really have to be a spectacular all around triple threat, as they say. So it's good to, and I introduce these to my students and say, you have to have these in your book. You need to have some of this.
And that's also, they're classics that are always going to be performed. So
that's,
you know,
right.
If you want a job,
that's right. I mean,
if you want to get paid to sing, you need to be able to do some of these things.
Well, and here's the interesting thing, you know, that right now we're very, like we were talking about before, we're very sensitive about how people feel about each other and how we address each other and how do we speak to each other as people, you know, and we can get mind-boggling. There's a song in Gigi that we are not doing called Thank Heaven for Little Girls. And because a lot of people have a problem with that song now. And that was made famous in the movie, right? If you say to people, name me a song from Gigi, that's probably one of the ones that they can whistle, right?
Yeah.
When they did the revival of Gigi a couple of years ago on Broadway with Vanessa Hudgens, that song was given to her aunt and her grandmother. It was not sung by a man talking about how beautiful little girls grow up to be. They changed some of the lyrics to be more about, you know, that we're responsible for turning her out to be a human being of quality and, you know, a good person of society. And so they changed it, you know, and they kind of went through that too in Paint Your Wagon. So have you ever seen the movie, the Paint Your Wagon movie?
It's been years.
It's
have it off the top of my head.
It's really terrible. But it's noteworthy because that is a movie where Clint Eastwood sings.
Yes.
Yes. He plays a character called Pardoner in there. Now, everybody knows who Clint Eastwood was, and when he was in his younger days, he was very strapping and square-jawed and just the poster child for All-American. And in Paint Your Wagon, the character that he is in the movie that's called Pardoner, in the original Broadway show, is called Julio. And he's a Mexican immigrant who has come to California in the gold rush to seek his fortune and to establish himself. So we go from a character, a tenor of color, a Mexican immigrant, to Clint Eastwood, not a Mexican immigrant, and certainly not a tenor, and they lowered all the keys for
him.
That
was Hollywood of that era, you know?
Hollywood of that era. Yeah. And so we really wanted to have I Talk to the Trees in there because that's one of the most famous songs from that show, but I had a really, really hard time with it. I struggled with that a lot because Dennis is more of a Clint Eastwood blonde with blue eyes than he is a Julio.
Yeah.
But I felt that the song was significant. And so we're going to address it in the narration and try to say, you know, this is how things evolve. And
this goes back to your research. And that's why I always like talking to you about these things, because I learn so much about it, because I'm not...
we're going to have to get you in a sea glass production.
Oh,
I'm going to find something for you.
My goodness.
I bet if I get the Standard Times staff behind me, I'm going to train you, and we're going to get you into production.
Train me. So I'll tell you a story. One of my really good friends in college was a music education major at the University of Tennessee, and we were on a road trip somewhere, and we're driving around, and she fell asleep in the passenger seat of the car, so I'm just kind of driving along, singing to the radio, and she turns over, she goes, "You really are tone deaf, aren't you?" Just out of the blue. And I always knew that I was a very poor singer. But the fact that she was trained and, you know, quickly just identified it in a moment, I was like, okay, yeah, I'm going to just be quiet now.
No, well, but you know what? I have had a couple of students over the years come to me allegedly tone deaf, and a lot of it is for young gentlemen is because they cannot feel the voice in their face. They cannot feel the placement, and so they do that kind of a thing. And I had a young man who came to me like that, could not match pitch to save his life. He graduated last year from UMass Lowell with a music production degree, and he's a pretty decent singer.
Fantastic.
So it can happen,
it
Jerry.
It can happen. All right.
We're going to have to talk about it. I'll say, well, I do this to singers that I like. I'll have coffee with them, and you know, you're saying, how do I find people?
Yeah.
When I find people that I like, I'll say to them, tell me what's on your wish list. What's your bucket list? Because very rarely do we get that as artists. Most of the time, it's you audition for something or you've had a really, you know, and they say, we want you to do X. Very rarely do people come to you and say, what would you like to do? And I do ask my artists that. Tell me what's on your bucket list. Let me see.
Yeah,
I like to keep that in my little file cabinet in my head.
Because you're right. Because most people, you know, set a show on, okay, this is going to sell tickets, X number of tickets. This is what we need.
Right.
And it's interesting that you're kind of looking at it from the artist's point of view, saying like, what can someone, you know, check off their bucket list? What can they be really excited about performing? Because then they're going to give a better performance. It's just natural that if you're really excited about it.
Or somebody's never expected them to do this particular genre or this style, and I'm going to bring them into that particular type of thing.
Very cool. Yeah. Well, I won't be singing Tuesday and Thursday, and we're all very thankful
for
that.
Myself included. But soon, dear public, Jerry will be performing with us soon.
Don't Patrice is threatening you. Don't buy into it. But thank you, Patrice, for coming in.
Thank you very much.
Tuesday and Thursday, Tuesday at Cape Cod.
Yes.
At
Dennis Union Church, on 6A. So if you want to take a gorgeous drive on the old Kings Highway 6A, it's beautiful. And there's a great cafe next door called Scargo Cafe. Tell them I sent you.
Yeah.
And fabulous food, and then come over for the show.
We all need to check out the Cape before summer ends anyway, so yeah.
I've been spending a fair amount of time there for this show, and I love the Cape, but I do love my New Bedford area too. And
so then Thursday, to avoid the mosquitoes, to avoid any threat of the troop, believe you're moving to Fairhaven for the Thursday night show. Starts what time?
They both start at 7 o'clock. Okay. The doors open at 6:30, and the board of Seaglass Theater Company will be there to answer all your questions. And, you know, we take credit cards and cash and check, and we'll be there to answer any questions. And I love meeting people after the show.
Wonderful.
I really do.
Thank you again for coming in.
Thank you.
Just going to run this dog to see if we can find any type of human remains that are left.
Listen to Where Secrets Go to Die, The Disappearance of Derek Hennigan. From the Detroit Free Press, a new podcast set in the woods of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Available on Apple, Spotify, Freep.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.